superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
Feels like I live in a dream.
She hails from Poplar, and she methodically assembled a group of versatile musicians to play dozens of her new songs. Now, Baby Eyes makes his debut album.
Tell me if you like it, tell me if you like it or not. Tell me if you like it, tell me if you like it or not.
But first, no, there's nothing wrong with your radio. That is Larry Mueller's theme song, and we caught up with him for his annual broadcast at Bayfield in Bloom.
Broadcasting live from the Bayfield Lakeside Pavilion, and it's great, always great to be here.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you're listening to the Friday morning broadcast of our show, you know Larry Mueller as the host of the show that comes up next. But that's putting it backwards. Larry was a Wisconsin public radio legend long before the various incarnations of this show existed. As the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame noted in his 2017 induction, he that year celebrated his 50th year on the air as WPR celebrated its 100th. Along the way, he earned a Ph.D., became a much-admired professor, and pioneered WPR's live call-in show format that continues today. We caught up with him preparing to do just that on his annual Bayfield and Bloom pilgrimage, where he took a break to sit with us, watching a shimmering Lake Superior as the wind tapped against flagpoles and the rigging of boats anchored at the docks. Here's our conversation.
We're sitting in front of, at the Bayfield Pavilion, in front of the beautiful Lake Superior shoreline.
It is beautiful.
And I'm really happy to be here, to be part of this Bayfield celebration. It's been a lot of fun for me over the years to do this. And I look forward to it. And Jill Nadeau, my producer, Clara Neipert, it's her first time here, but Jill and I have been doing it a long time, and I've been doing it even longer than Jill, over 20 years.
Well, I was going to ask that. You're certainly no stranger to the area. So when did Bayfield in Bloom begin for your show, and when did you first start hanging around here?
Well, I've hung around this area for quite a little time, probably for the last 40 years or so. We have a property that's not too far from here, and so I have a chance to come up pretty often, and I'm thinking it's 24 years that we first started coming up here to sort of celebrate Bayfield and Bayfield in Bloom. I like to tell the story of the first year. There was a mom with two kids that she was homeschooling, and they were like 4 and 5. And Tekela was the young girl, and she had drawn a picture for me of me in Bayfield, for Bayfield in Bloom, and I still have that. But now that little girl is married and a couple of kids of her own.
I would imagine, yeah. And time does do that to people.
Time flies by a lot. It's like with my teaching at the University of Wisconsin. It's like I've taught now the children of students that I taught years back. They had their own kids, and they said, be sure to take Larry's class. Many of them have told me. So
you've been doing radio a little while, and a little while longer than I've been doing media, and I stopped counting after 40 years, so you don't have to add too much to that.
Yeah, I was first on the air as a student in 1967. So
which was a tumultuous time. Are you talking about UW-Madison?
UW-Madison. And I took a course in radio broadcasting from a guy by the name of Maury White. And Maury White had the Farm Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. It was a half-hour show, and I was taking the course in the spring, and he was going to Colorado for the summer to teach and didn't have anybody to do his radio show. So he said, hey, would you be interested in a master's degree? I didn't have any job lined up, and I thought about it. I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I did the show in the summer, worked on my master's, and then about halfway through the master's, he got promoted to a deanship. And so then they said, well, you know, can you just do the show for now until we find somebody with a PhD? Because part of the job was teaching and being a professor. So I didn't have any job prospects yet. So I said, yeah, I can do that. And then a year went by. They still hadn't found anybody. And then one more year, and into the second year, they said, well, why don't you get your PhD and we'll hire you back? So I still didn't have any job prospects. So I said, sure, and I went and finished my PhD, and now here we are 55 years later, and I'm still doing radio for Wisconsin Public Radio, and I still don't have any job prospects.
I was going to say, you confirmed, I think, my career, that this is a great temporary thing to do before you find a real job.
It's so much fun doing this show. And of course, over the years, it's changed a lot. It used to be a half-hour farm show, then it turned into an hour show. Jack Mitchell, who was station manager at the time, this is like 35 years ago, he said, hey, I want to start a call-in talk show, and I'd like to have you be the first one. And it sounded great to me, so I said, yeah. He said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'd like to do shows that are useful to people. I don't really want to deal so much with politics or at all with politics, but I'd like to do the kinds of shows that people can use in their daily lives. And he said, well, that's exactly what I was hoping you'd say. So that's how we got started, and kind of followed that same tenet throughout my career in call-in shows. And it's been a lot of fun, and of course it was an hour, that now it's an hour and a half.
Interesting time. It's not always garden talk, so tell us when it is and when it isn't.
Yeah, I'm on from 11 to 12:30 every weekday, and typically the Monday shows, they might be health related, and I always have guests, experts. I'm not the expert for sure. So on Mondays we might deal with, I have a couple of physical therapists on, or to talk about aches and pains, or it might be some other, it might deal with cancer, it could deal with anything health related. That's basically what happens on Monday, although other things happen as well.
Even though you don't do politics, news happens, and yeah, you have to respond
yeah.
to it.
Yeah. Tuesdays, we'll often have authors on, but I also, once a month, I have a veterinarian on who talks about your pet's health. And Wednesday is always outdoor environment, so we have a bunch of folks the first Wednesday of every month, either Scott Craven or a couple of other folks from wildlife ecology at the UW are on the show. They're very popular. And then Thursday, I could have a mechanic on the show and people call about their car problems, or I might have a builder on the show or somebody in that vein, and you know, people call the roof leaks or whatever and we fix those. And then Friday, of course, is garden talk, which is I'm pretty sure it's our most popular locally produced show, and a broad range of guests, anything that has to do with plants or gardening, we cover that on Fridays. And then the Friday show, the first hour of it, replays on Saturday mornings.
Right. We are speaking with Larry Mueller. He is familiar to all of our listeners, of course, in general, but also as the show that follows this one, so you can get a double dose of Larry today. We spoke a little bit about your history. What about the future? You know, we have this ChatGPT, and that's just the beginning, I hate to tell you. So, you know, could there actually be a ChatGPT radio host? I think technically I know the answer is yes.
Yeah, I think there could. You know, there's going to be a lot of change. There's been some talk about taking AM radio stations out of cars. You know,
I'm happy to say they got a little revoked immediately.
Yeah, it did, but it's sort of a little bit of sign of the times. But I think a lot more people down the road are not going to be listening necessarily to their radio.
Terrestrial radio.
In fact, that's the case right now. I bet it's going to even be more the case down the road. And so, how do we keep going? Well, we keep providing locally produced programs. Wisconsin Public Radio places a big emphasis on local. And now, local for me is the state of Wisconsin. So I want to do shows that are going to be useful no matter where you live in the state. Now, not every show is going to appeal to every single person, but there's enough of those shows every week that I think people are going to want to listen in and tune into. And, you know, we call it the Larry Mueller Show. We used to call it Conversations with Larry Mueller. It was never called We're Going to Educate You, which would be the worst thing you could tell a lot of people. Okay, sit down, we're going to educate you. But
in all seriousness, we get educated doing these
shows. I have learned a heck of a lot over the years about a wide variety of topics. And I always tell people I'm pretty good at a cocktail party because I know a little bit.
That's exactly you. I don't know if you heard my soundbite. I have heard yours, but I say that public radio is everything that people talk to you about at a cocktail party.
You're absolutely right, Robin. It's for me, it's a real treat. I learn something every day on the show, you know, and I've also learned enough sometimes of. Let's say the Garden Talk Show. If a guest is asked a question and they may give an answer, but I remember there's another part to that answer that they could probably add, and I'll say, you know, I've also heard you say, and I'll make that comment. Now, oh yeah, that's right. Let me expand on that a little bit. So I mean, I'm able to do quite a bit of that just from what I've learned as part of the show. It's been wonderful.
So what have been some of the most memorable ones?
Thinking back over the years, I can remember a time when there was quite a hullabaloo over fishing rights, and we had some people were angry with the natives, and natives were angry with the whites primarily.
And that was actually in our area. Yeah,
yeah, and I was able to bring a guest from each of those sides. I was able to bring those two together, and I had somebody, I think I had a DNR person on too, bring those three groups together, and as the show went on, I could see that some of the anger was going away from both of sides, and I felt really good about it. Now, whether it had a big impact, I think it did have an impact on those two people, and maybe hopefully that radiated out to some others as well. But yeah, that's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But that was
that's when Route 53 was two lanes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's one. And I've interviewed a lot of authors, and many of the interviews that I've done with authors have been very interesting and fun for me. But, you know, some of the regular guests, like Scott Craven, for example, who's on, you know, was always on once a month, now he's on every other month.
Tell us a little bit about him.
He's a wildlife ecologist from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. And Scott came to Wisconsin probably 35 years ago. And he replaced a guy named Bob Ellerson. Bob Ellerson had a 15-minute show on Wisconsin Public Radio. It was always dealing with the environment, and Scott picked that up, but then I got him on the show, and we did a lot of shows together and always resonated with people. So every time he's on, immediately all the phone lines light up and people have questions, or they saw this, or what is this bird, or I saw this track, or you know, it could be anything. and he's retired, but now he still comes and does the show every other month.
Well, let's hear some of that.
Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network as we take a look at Wisconsin wildlife with Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist. I'm Larry Mueller. Scott, good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
Kathy in Green Bay is up with a question or comment, so let's go to her. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My question is, we have a red cardinal that just all day long bangs into my window, then goes to the next house and hits the window, and it just does that all day long. Is it ill, or what would cause it?
No, it's fine. It's a fairly common spring event for cardinals, male robins, a couple other species to attack. What it's doing is not attacking your window. It thinks it's attacking another cardinal because it sees its reflection in your window. So it's a spring territorial thing, and bird breeding activity is getting underway very rapidly here. And likely the bird has a mate with a nest somewhere in the area, and it looks at your window from its perch, and he says, "Holy cow, there's a male cardinal in my territory. I'm going to get him," and bang, into the window. And unfortunately, the reflection never disappears. So the bird will repeatedly and diligently attack that reflection for sometimes hours on end.
And that was one of Larry's segments with Scott Craven. We're speaking with Larry Mueller. Anybody else come to mind? Or how about this? The most unexpected.
Well, I can tell you one show that was interesting in probably the wrong way. I had a person scheduled to talk about how to deal with stress. So I had read her, looked up her research, and I had, you know, that's what you do when you prepare for a show. You look what the person's background is. Anyway, talked to her before the show, introduced her, asked the first question, and her mouth opened and nothing came out. She's stressed out. So I said, you know, before you answer that question, let me take a crack at it. So I answered my own question, and she got out, yeah. And then I asked another one. She still couldn't respond, so I answered that one. And then a caller had already called in, asked a question, and I answered that one. And then the next call, she was okay. So then the whole show, she was fine the rest of the way. And then after that, over the next week or so, I got many emails, even a few letters, and the gist of every one of them was, why don't you let your guests do the talking?
Oh, I thought they were going to say they want to visit with Dr. Mueller.
No, they were irritated that I was, you know, when you're an interviewer, I mean, you know, the guest is always the star.
Right.
So you don't want to insert yourself unless you have to.
Well, the guest has to agree to say something.
I'll tell one other one that sort of that nature. I had a show, we're going to do a show on the Peace Corps, and somebody came, was from the Peace Corps, and he showed up, a young guy, showed up, and he had a paper bag full of something, and sat down, and he was not saying very much, and I was, you know, trying to chat him up a little before the show. And he was kind of quiet, and I thought, oh, I don't know how this is going to go. So anyway, I start the introduction, and now we're live. He reaches into his bag, his paper bag, and he pulls out a six-pack of beer. And
this is an in-person interview, I take it.
Yes, in-person interview.
I mean, this could happen anytime on the phone, and we just don't know about it.
And so I just keep going, and I ask the first question, and the first thing you hear is, he opens the first beer, and he drank three beers during the show, got up and left, and I never saw him again. And
did he offer you
no,
one?
No, he didn't.
Well, that's not a very nice guess.
Well, those are really the exceptions to the rule for sure. But, you know, it's part of the lore of the show, I guess. But for the most part, the guests that we have are great guests. And they do a wonderful job, and it's always fun.
Right. So Bayfield in bloom, you're here, but you come here anyway.
Well, I mean, I love Bayfield. Just the beauty of the area is so wonderful to take in. And the people. You know, the people are friendly. They're helpful. If you've got a friendly group like what we find here in northern Wisconsin, that makes any trip.
All right. We've been speaking with Larry Mueller. Thank you for joining us, Larry.
Been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Robin.
Coming up, the carefully selected group Baby Eyes premieres its first album. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've patronized the Twin Ports music scene over the past few years, you might be familiar with some of the names associated with our next guests, which include a number of artists who've been on this show. The group is Baby Eyes, which began a little over a year ago when Duluth singer-songwriter Heidi Farrell brought together local musicians to record some of her new songs. She first turned to drummer Curtis Bellows, and then the guitarist and bassist Ian Alexi from the group Hobo Nephews, and they were joined by Kenny Bressler on synthesizer and Jacob Mann of New Salty Dogs on keyboards, guitar, and vocals. They have since produced 35 original songs, 12 of which are on their debut album, See the World Through, produced by another local connection, Rich Mattson, who also has been on this show. And that album has its official release at Earthrider Brewery in Superior tomorrow in a concert featuring even more veterans of the show. Joining us now are Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexi. Welcome to Simply Superior. And I should say welcome to the family of all kinds of people who have been here before.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Ian, we actually met at Earthrider at a benefit concert for Ukraine Medical Relief. Everyone was there, including Rich Mattson. And I remember everybody knew you, both the audience as an audience favorite, and you seem to be a musician's musician. Your name was just, you know, I heard it all night long.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. Cool.
So, Heidi, tell us a little bit about your background. I do know you're from Poplar, and you're also a visual artist. Which came first, and do they inform each other?
I'm not sure which one came first. I've always been singing, and it was in musical theater growing up. But they do definitely both lend to each other. And I think that they just contribute to one another. Like, the more that I practice both at the same time, especially.
Do you do the same subject where you do, a painting version and a musical version?
My painting is abstract and pretty much based on the moment, when I'm making it. Or just subconscious things that I've got going on or whatnot. But that's a lot like the music because we get jammy with it and we get kind of abstract with how we present it, I guess, sometimes. So, yeah, it's just based on the moment as well.
Formally trained in one or the other or both?
Both, yeah. Formally trained in both. I just had like vocal lessons growing up and went to college for art stuff.
Mm-hmm. Ian, as I said, everybody knew your name, but give us a little bit more background. For those who, for some reason, didn't know your name.
Oh, I'm one of the older members of Baby Eyes. I'm in my mid-40s, and I started playing guitar when I was 12, which was like, the heavy metal and grunge era. And then I just kind of evolved from there and got into blues and jazz and bluegrass and went to music school. On the East Coast, I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and then I finished in Vermont at Goddard College, and I played in some jazz and funk bands, and eventually I came to Duluth and hooked up with my brother, singer-songwriter Teague Alexi, and we formed Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank, and then we toured and made several records with that project. And that more or less brings me up to date with to where we are now.
All right. So what about the name Baby Eyes? And baby is spelled B-A-B-I-E. So
Yeah. Well, when we got together, just Curtis, Ian, and I, we decided we definitely needed a name. So I wrote down a bunch of different names and then texted a picture of it to Ian. And I had one in mind, and then he had the same one in mind. So he saw Baby Eyes, but it was spelled B-A-B-Y. But then we found some conflict with that with other things, so we change it to B-A-B-I-E.
I do have one specific memory when this was all working itself out. I do remember this because I don't remember Heidi ever doing something like this before or since. Like, the name Baby Eyes was on the page, but we were both dancing around it because Baby Eyes might sound sort of too strange. And at one point, Heidi sort of stamped her feet and jumped up and down and said, "I want Baby Eyes. It's weird and I love it." Like a mini tantrum, which was totally out of character, but it was funny. It was like, wasn't angry or anything. You were being funny.
And it sounds like it reinforces the baby theme. Yeah. Stamping your feet and having your tantrum.
We were going for a theme of like that would describe our perspective, which is just seeing every day with fresh eyes. So it's just seeing the world freshly every day.
All right.
And the title of the album being See the World Through. And then if you put the name of the band after that, it's See the World Through Baby Eyes. That's kind of the sort of theme of the name and of the band is a fresh perspective.
Got it. We're speaking with Heidi Farrell and Ian Alexi of the group Baby Eyes. They'll be performing for their album release party at Earth Rider Brewery in Superior tomorrow night, June 10th. So how about something from the album, Feel All Right? Can you set it up for us?
Oh, yeah. This is a song I play for myself to make myself feel better. And it kind of works. We play it at the beginning of most shows, just to kind of set it out.
All right, well, here is Feel All Right by Baby Eyes.
Do what it takes to make it feel all right now.
That was Feel All Right by Baby Eyes. We're speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexi of the group Baby Eyes. They'll be performing for their album release party at Earthrider Brewery in Superior tomorrow night, June 10th. Also on the bill are Boss Mama and a Jabberhooch, featuring Colleen Myrie, and Gavin St. Clair and the Gavin St. Clair Trio, all of whom have been on the show with us before. So, Heidi, it sounds like you were rather methodical in constructing the band. I'm noting in particular Kenny Bressler on synthesizer, who has been described as an experimental musician. He doesn't do that in the middle of a recording, does he?
we'll allow it.
Well, there's one song, it's actually the last song on the album, where the lyrics talk about being in an arcade, and he made noises to recreate a video arcade. So he gets pretty experimental. He does some really neat stuff.
But was that a surprise when you heard it, or did he say, hey, I'm going to do this?
Oh, I had written that particular song, and I asked him to do it.
Yeah, but from the get-go, I knew he was an experimental musician. And when I heard him play, I thought, yeah, he'd be a great person to create some atmosphere. You know, he'd add a lot of that, and he really does, for sure. And he bought one of my weirdest pieces that I had in my art show at Wusso's Coffee House, and that cemented it for me. I was like, no. I mean, I was surprised that somebody bought that, but I'm glad it was Kenny.
It sounds like you were saying, I was surprised that anybody bought that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm always surprised. Yeah.
Well, I know you said they were abstract, but what is it? What was the piece?
Oh, it was a green... like bust of a woman peeling her face off.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's called anticlimactic reveal. Like the what's beneath the surface is just the same as what's on the surface. There's a period of time in my life where I felt like one with being the strange person I am, and I don't mind.
Having gone this far, I might as well ask, is there a musical counterpart to that piece?
Oh, I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I'm sure we...
Okay. All right, we'll find out. So, Ian, would you describe the group as a quintet? And if so, what kind of quintet? In other words, if you go to classical music, you know, you say a quartet, and that's usually two violins, a viola and a cello or something like that. But not necessarily. Is instrumentation pretty set, or is it fluid?
Well, it is fluid. I'm glad you asked that question. Because the initial... three-piece lineup was Heidi playing guitar and me on bass and Curtis on drums. Then we added Kenny and Jacob both on keyboards, and that's mostly what the album is guitar, bass, drums, and the two keyboards. But then since Heidi has started playing bass and has gotten really into it, and so I've gone back to guitar, which is what I'm best at, for myself. And now Jacob is also playing guitar, so it does shift a lot. The personnel has been intact, but we've been sort of exploring the different roles that we can all play, which is really fun.
All right. So let's hear another one. How about Like It or Not? Can you set that up for us?
Sure. This one is an exciting one for me. I wrote it and in celebration of kind of getting over a hump in my life. Yeah. So it's just a spiritual renewal sort of thing.
Not quite peeling your face off, right?
No, it's not peeling my face off.
All right, here is Like It or Not by Baby Eyes.
You could be here with me.
And that was Like It or Not by Baby Eyes. We are speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexi. Their debut album, See the World Through, will be officially released at Earthrider Brewery in Superior tomorrow, Saturday, June 10th at 7 p.m. Going back, Ian, to what I was saying about the region's musicians being collaborative and all helping each other out, you're still playing with Hobo Nephews? And where, by the way, does that name come from?
Oh, gosh. Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank. Well, we're Keegan and I are brothers, and we have an Uncle Frank. And it was really just sort of a joke because he would sometimes sleep on our couch growing up. And then when we, later on, Keegan and I both slept on his couch. So we're sort of a family joke of calling each other hobos. We actually haven't been performing for the last couple of years, but we're still very close, and I mean, we're brothers and best friends, so we certainly haven't ruled out performing in the future, but we've taken a break from it.
Got it. Heidi, for Baby Eyes, where can we find out more about your music?
Well, we've got an Instagram. It's Baby Eyes Music, B-A-B-I-E. We also have a Facebook page.
And a band page.
Yeah, Bandcamp page, yes, and then
where you can download the first two songs now, and the whole album will be there as well. But
yeah,
great. Well, one more song to take us out. I'm going to suggest "Runaway," and you sort of answered this question already because I noted, Ian, you're the soloist on this. You guys said you sort of rotate different instruments and instrumentation amongst yourselves.
Yeah, on this one. I think I'm playing bass and I'm playing a guitar track on it and singing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the way you said, I think I'm
at
playing
the same
bass.
Time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, yes. And whose song is it?
I wrote the song, yeah, about a friend of mine that had a background of having been a runaway. And also there's a theme of in the history of rock and roll of runaway songs, of course, Del Shannon being a big number one hit in the 60s. But it is a theme in rock and roll that I, you know, just sort of wanted to tap into.
Okay. Well, we'll let that theme, as I said, take us out. We've been speaking with Heidi Farrow and Ian Alexi of the group Baby Eyes. They'll be performing for their album release party at Earthrider Brewery in Superior tomorrow night, Saturday, June 10th. Thank you for joining us, Heidi and Ian.
Thank you, Robin.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Slow it down, my little runaway. Get your mind out of yesterday. Wild child, sound like a cliche. One step ahead.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, the culture wars continue in our country, hitting home in the town of Mellon over what some are charging a failure to teach about diversity.
That's right, Robin. Recently, the State Department of Public Instruction released preliminary findings of an investigation into the Mellon School District, and they said that it's not meeting state educational standards on teaching cultural diversity in Wisconsin and about Wisconsin tribes. The Department of Public Instruction began investigating a complaint against the district last summer, and it found that the district didn't provide enough evidence of adequate teaching materials on cultural diversity for grades K through 12, And they also found that Mellon's teachings on Wisconsin tribes were lacking. A community member said he first filed the complaint after tense meetings on critical race theory last year that led to the school board barring teaching CRT in classrooms. And that theory holds that racism is inherent among social, economic, and legal institutions that have oppressed people of color. And it's met a lot of opposition among Republican lawmakers in multiple states, including Wisconsin. The district superintendent said that the district's faculty can't teach from a perspective that the U.S. and its legal institutions are systemically racist or designed to create or maintain inequalities between genders or ethnicities or religious groups or races. And she disputed the preliminary findings of the state about the district's teachings. She says that the schools have several teachings on the state's Ojibwe tribes. So the school board has the right to appeal the findings or request a public hearing within 45 days before a final decision is made. And the district has 90 days to meet state standards, but it could also get extensions for coming into compliance.
All right. Well, the water contaminants, PFAS, remain an intractable problem. But now the Wisconsin legislature is taking it up, as well as our local counties.
That's right. Just recently, the Wisconsin legislature submitted a Republican-authored bill that would create grants for PFAS testing, cleanup, and infrastructure projects. But that legislation would also place new restrictions on when and how the State Department of Natural Resources can test for PFAS. And that's something that the state's largest business group, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, supports. His group called for lawmakers to cut certain PFAS chemicals covered under the bill and also expressed support for restricting the DNR from being able to test and publish the results from private land without an owner's permission. And that would extend to industrial sites. Environmental groups, for their part, are happy to see lawmakers producing a bill that would provide funding for communities that have been hit hard by PFAS in Wisconsin, but they said these restrictions on the DNR would weaken environmental protections that currently exist and that they need to have more authority there to be able to handle the situation. And you know, under Democratic Governor Tony Evers' budget, he had proposed $106 million to help communities address PFAS contamination. The legislature bumped that up to $125 million. But there are a lot of disputes yet still with the bill. But the funding itself is insured. And then locally, Douglas and Bayfield counties have passed a resolution asking the state to take a closer look at PFAS and biosolids. Basically, that's treated sewage sludge that's spread on farm fields. And this is an issue that has come up in areas where sewage sludge that's been spread on fields had higher levels of PFAS. And the concern is that it would seep down into the soil and eventually make its way into groundwater. So these two counties have asked the DNR to take a closer look at that.
Okay. Well, Rick, moving to the Minnesota legislature, all sorts of bills were passed into law in what some are calling the most productive legislative session in years that concluded last month. What exactly did they pass?
Yeah, during a very busy 2023 legislative session, lawmakers made several changes to what's legal and not legal in Minnesota. And it involved much more than just the legalization of marijuana. Gun control measures grabbed the headlines in most coverage of this year's public safety package, but the 500-page bill contains many changes to state criminal law. Carjacking, for instance, now state law sets stiff sentences for taking someone's vehicle by force. The lowest tier, third-degree carjacking, carries a maximum sentence of 10 years. If a person uses a weapon, real or simulated, or inflicts harm on a victim, they're guilty of first-degree carjacking and face a minimum sentence of up to 20 years. This year's public safety bill includes a new path for people convicted of crimes to secure earlier release. The Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act changes the parole system to allow people convicted of crimes to get released after completing 50% of their sentences on condition that they completed programs like addiction or sex offender treatment. Under past law, release is possible at 66% of the sentence. drug paraphernalia. And what's been described as first in a nation change, Minnesota has decriminalized drug paraphernalia. That means it's no longer a criminal offense to possess objects like pipes or syringes that have residue of illegal drugs like meth or heroin. Addiction harm reduction advocates hailed the move as a step toward reducing infectious disease and overdose deaths. Deep fakes, using artificial intelligence to create sexual images of people without their consent or for spreading election disinformation, will be illegal in Minnesota under a law set to go into effect this summer. This change passed as a standalone bill in May. The aim is to curb the misuse of deep fakes, realistic artificial intelligence generated video, images and sound portraying people saying and doing things they've never done. In a separate elections bill, the state also created new penalties for election disinformation and interfering with poll workers, spreading false information about voting 60 days ahead of an election and harassing or intimidating election officials or voters would be a gross misdemeanor. And these are just a few of very many law changes that the legislature took up this year.
All right, we'll try to keep count. And finally, any day is a good day fishing, especially where we live.
Yes, this shouldn't come as a surprise to Northland anglers, but Wisconsin and Minnesota rank near the top in best states for fishing. Louisiana actually came out on top, Wisconsin second, and Minnesota third in a recent systematic analysis of the top U.S. states for fishing. The analysis, sponsored by the website gambling.com, compared how much water each state had for fishing, how many fishing licenses each state sold, the cost of a fishing license, the cost of a charter fishing boat, and how much people spend on fishing in general. Out of a possible 100 points, so Louisiana came in near the top for cheapest fishing licenses, just $10 for a resident there, and high in the amount of water available. Wisconsin and Minnesota scored very high in the square miles of water available. Wisconsin, of course, has more Great Lakes around it, and in the number of licenses sold. Minnesota also ranked near the top in how much money people spend on fishing. Connecticut, California, Kansas, New Jersey, and Nevada were rated as the worst states for fishing.
All right. Well, you know what? I just want to remind people before they head to Louisiana that that is way downstream from the Mississippi on the banks of Wisconsin and Minnesota. So keep that in mind. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Baby Eyes. Stay safe, everyone.